You see, under the Act today, the State Sponsored Corporations Act, the authority for running the day-by-day affairs lies with the board director. The minister can interfere by issuing directives. Now he issues his directives, there are two categories. A special directive or an ordinary directive. It's all laid on the Act. See? Now, a special directive would be one that has reference to a particular corporation. General directives are one that applies to all corporations. Now it clearly says, even a special directive shall be issued by the minister only after it has consulted the board. The whole purpose was to give the directors a sense of responsibility. Now I'm aware of one corporation, for example, which considering expansion scheme, the board's director sat down and said, now look here, we want to have this expansion scheme, we need a consultant. Now we must get the one of the best consultant firms. So they wrote to all the embassies in Ceylon, saying they have an expansion program this year, where the embassies can recommend two consultants from their countries who would submit their qualifications to and experience in this sort of project to advise. All the firms wrote, the embassies wrote. And the board directors, after very careful consideration, felt that from the qualifications written in, that a consultant from Germany was the most suitable person to advise the corporation's expansion program. To be sure, nothing doing. He wanted from a Canadian consulting firm who had done some work for, I think it's the paper corporation, foreign paper corporation. Now the point is this, you see, the fact that the board had taken such meticulous care to make those inquiries. Well, the chances are that their decision, the man who is considered, was better than an ad hoc decision of one man, and a minister. And what's the purpose of the minister taking his time to make a decision? You see? Now, if I was a member of that board, why should I exert myself again? I mean, the tendency there is not to encourage original thinking, which is defeats the very purpose of the ordinance. I mean, the ordinance itself originated by taking away from government at that time, during the UMP time, all these state ventures were run by the state as members of departments. And the purpose was to remove them out so they could be run independently and using methods which apply in the private sector.
And with less rigid accounting systems?
Quite. No, not less rigid. Private sector are very rigid, effective. But I know cases, I remember the case when Egerton Paul was director of industry, he cited a case to me once where I think one of these corporations or in the family parts of the department want to have a certain water pipe. He's involved purchasing about 100 feet of piping. They had to fill up certain application forms, go to write the ministry. The ministry had sent to the government stores. It took them 6 months to get for 50 feet of piping. I mean, it's fantastic. Now, where the private firm would just get it in half an hour. See, the work is done. Now, that type of thing. Now, that original tendency. Now, everybody seems conscious. And I think you're revising the Act. The State's contract. I mean, during Mr. Palace time, they start announcing the paper, the Philip was thinking of changing it. But what are they changing it towards? Now that is very important. What are you going to change this Act? How are you going to run this corporation more effectively? As a fighting, some of them are effective now, in spite of this anything.
Right, corporations couldn't do this sort of system, get a pipes in half an hour. When they given certain flexibility.
They're supposed to now. I have to do a lot of that. But at the same time, suddenly we get treasury surpluses, which apply not only to government departments, but to us. for the tender system.
Are they supposed to apply to corporations? I thought the idea was to free the...
Now they come home. That's because the treasury resents, you see, this invasion of what they consider their privacy. There's a lot of petty jealousy, isn't there?
Are you bound by safe harbor?
Not officially. But sometimes treasury circles say, look here, this applies to corporations or cabinet decisions.
Okay, hasn't one of the factors been that in certain corporations, chairman or the director have misused their authority and therefore yes. You get this desire to control?
Yes, there was a case of the Salt Corporation, a classical case for Salt Corporation.
Oh, what happened there?
Do you know the famous case? Tremendous inquiry. Did he arrest him? Well, I'd say he left the country. Brilliant chap, one of the most extraordinary characters we met in Ceylon. Fantastic chap. But crazy. He was a chap who wanted to make a breakwater. One was he was going to take a lot of the old buses and dump them in the sea. You see, they put concrete in dump. The other one, he was going to go to Japan and get some coral insects. And see the coral insects at a bit of a reef. But anyway, that was a mess.
Was he a political appointment?
No, he was a bit eccentric. Brilliant chap, and he did and a lot of people worked in subordinate force who played a lot of parts. I don't think the man himself was corrupt. But that's what the public inquiry and. But see, these things can be solved if you have a minister. Personally, I think boards should be done. I think boards are useless.
Aren't boards rather cumbersome and slow?
Very cumbersome. Very cumbersome. You should have a managing director, responsible director of the minister. The ministry should be strengthened. The ministry should have a top staff of businessmen. Attached to the ministry. Accountants, personal managers, engineers. Managed engineers, you see, for having things like project planning and that type of thing. Now, if you have the managing director, required to submit monthly, quarterly reports, and the nature of the reports clearly defined. Profitability, income, expenditure can be worked out. You could lay down quite clearly what is the essential information required for somebody to know the health of the organization. Output, manpower, per unit manpower output, not what you call ratios. Today in the business world, you have ratios, which are the indices. And any manager, all they need to know is those ratios. And as you get experience, you know that a change in a ratio is a danger signal. For control purposes. Then the facts of the auditor. Now if you have that, the managing director is responsible. If he doesn't conform, out he goes. Or transfer. Or even demoted. Yes, sir. And his minister's advisors, each of these reports go through them up to the minister. So he doesn't have the deity of work. The responsibility is to run the organization. Expansion schemes, for capital expenditure, full projects that have to be prepared, clear cut, everything up to him. To him, I mean, through his advisor. He shouldn't have to go through details of deciding. Now, I know one example, for example, when Philip came in, he told me, well, I want to apply with corporation, you increase production. So I said, look, there's another project we have in mind. With it is fiberboard, chipboard. He said, you concentrate on production. I said, but this chipboard thing had nothing to do with increased production, it's utilizing waste. 3 times I took it up and he said, no. Fine, took it up with Godfrey Guntilaker, I put it in 5 years. Now he says a wonderful thing. Now they're going here with Chipboard. It's disgusting. I hear here of industry where 60% of all the materials go waste. You know, out of every, cubic foot of timber you buy in the timber form, log form, 60% goes as waste before it comes out. Now in other countries, they utilize that waste, you see. And that's where your economy comes in. Really, business management is the efficient utilization of your resources to the maximum.
So then, with regard to this rigidity which is coming in corporations, on the one hand, it would seem to be due to ministers and the cabinet and treasury intervention. But on the other hand, don't you think that in case of some corporations, the people who are put in charge are sometimes civil servants who are used to this procedures and things, and they bring in all these civil service procedures and checks.
But it's not an easy problem to solve. I know I've often talked to Minister Ambrotek, Mike's father. I've discussed with him some of these problems. I've discussed with Philip. Take for example, I think it was Philip who told me, he said, now look, if we choose from the private sector, people, businessmen, first of all, we do not know sufficiently about their interests, conflicts of interest. Are they prepared to give that service to, say, a nationalized venture? Being private capitalists, they're antagonistic to the very idea of nationalized enterprises. On the other hand, the civil servants, we know them, their records. So it's a question of trust. Might suppose you are discussing once on two vacancies on boards.
So they tend to offer citizens?
It's the easiest. Now the question is, how can you get the private sector people? The same question, how does the private sector get them? The private sector gets them by competing for them, offering them attractive salaries to get them in. How does, say, the commercial company or BCC, now take Barrett. He was understudy for Mr. Hartwell, then he was the senior man in charge of accounts. He was getting a pittance. I don't suppose he was getting more than about 1,100 or 1,200 in the Department of Ministry. The BCC advertised for accountant, chief accountant. He went over there with 2,500. Now see, if the private sector, why can't government offer? But there you see, good God, the accountant service, nobody gets 2,500 government accountant service. They're jealous. It's true that in government service, the other previous, you have your pensions and all of a sudden in the private sector you don't have, to the same extent. Except the private sector now is increasingly getting more there. Now take on this question of services in the corporations and so on. You'd be surprised at the range of a variety of conditions which prevail. I was on a committee once appointed on the previous government. Herman Pierce, you know, retired chief of treasury. Herman Pierce, old Wrangler, by the way. He was chairman of it. Of 5 years, we were appointed to report on fringe benefits by all the semi-constituted bodies, like other governments of CTB, the ports, cargo, all the corporations, the rubber research scheme, and so on, university. The university was included, and we had delegations from all over. The Bank of Ceylon, the Central Bank. And it's amazing the range of conditions of service. Now the bank chaps are well off. They've got both pensions as well as provident funds, gratuity schemes, and the corporation is only this national provident fund, you see. Now the need for standardization there. Because there's always one compared to the other. And demands right, etc.
But do you feel that even the boards of directors have not exercised the discretion and powers they have had and tended to be cautious and to seek ministerial approval when they need not, and to seek treasury approval when they need not, and so on and so forth?
That has been a tendency.
Even in the corporations in which you were closely, working?
No, I have avoided that. I have taken action where I could.
No, I was wondering whether the boards, some
Well, the boards don't act independently except at board meetings, you see. I've had occasion where one director of mine gave me a lot of trouble, used to interfere a lot and even go down and give orders to the staff. I took them up at my department of transport.
How did you find Maitapala as a minister?
He grew in his job. He grew in his job and he listened. He consulted. Now, during his period, we inaugurated the system of chairman's conferences. Matter of fact, G.P. Somersinger, who was then chairman of the cement corporation. I called the first meeting at my office of plywood of all the chairman with suggestion that we should write to Maitapala, suggesting that we should have a periodic conference with him. For two purposes. A, so that we could discuss joint problems with him, common problems, formulate a common policy, and B, so that we could be kept in touch with ministerial policy. His policy, as a minister, changes of interpreting government decisions and so on, so that we could be intelligently informed of the minister's point of view on issues, you see. So, consequently, that we had regular meetings with him, which were very useful. This whole proposal of standardizing procedures, purchasing procedures, accounting procedures, arose from that. And I found him every year being very much more mature. He was able to withstand pressure. Now, he admitted to me, for example, when he was the SLFP, tremendous pressure he got from party people. Now, take my own case. Now, I was chairman of leather as well as Tinto of plywood. Now, Jin Tota, he's just outside Goa. A lot of the MPs in that area were SLFP. The only MP in the Inuit Ojia which was a leftist was Neil Dialvis. All the other MPs went to my father, they looked at some of the leftists. Bad influence and all that sort of thing. My father told this. He said, I'm not concerned what your political opinions are. I'm only concerned with your job. Now that I can't understand Philip Everett. Now I don't know whether Maitapala at the very beginning would have been a strong voice. And he told me, I said, don't talk to me, I'm running this prayer. If Ratham does a bad job, I'll handle him. I judge him on his result, that's all. Which is a very terrible thing. And he didn't interfere like a lot of other people do on appointments. Only one occasion I ever had him phone me up about an appointment. And he said, I understand in the private leather corporation there's a vacancy going for assistant salesman. There's a young chap who's the son of old Desanayake who was a member of parliament. A very nice boy, he's looking for a job. And he says, he'll apply for the job. So I said, frankly, I'm not aware even that job is free. I said, that category of job, you see, doesn't come up before the board. When there's a vacancy in the existing cadre, automatically there's a certain procedure follows. I had selection committees. Anything belonged to an executive, you see, below the level of that, automatically the cadre is filled. There's a procedure, application, that qualification, each job has its qualifications laid down. Application go out, then there's selection committee, there's the manager of the factory, the secretary of the company, and the head of the department. If a vacancy in the tannery manager. If the shoe factory manager. But that's it. Automatically done. So I said, not even aware of the job. But I'll check up and find out. I phoned up and they told me that the chap had applied, but he didn't have one of the qualifications. Played out. So I phoned up my father and said, I just phoned up my head about it. Oh, thank you very much. I just want to know this one. He didn't put in any wires. Now that's the thing, I've never had any illustration of that.
That's very interesting. What about William De Silva?
William De Silva also is good, but he's a bit lazy.
He's generally known for that.
Easy going.
Okay, that makes administration easier in one way, doesn't it? For the administrators.
Right, for the administrators, yes, but on the other hand, you don't get your results, you must have a certain amount of control, you see? Now I must say that I might have improved a lot. And I'll take for example the particular last 2 years when G.V.P. Somersinger gave up his chairmanship for this and became permanent secretary.
Chairmanship of what?
Cement Corporation. Mm-hmm. Chairman of Cement Corporation. And he became a permanent secretary. Then you see his knowledge of the problems of corporations was a great assistance. He and Gottfried Gunther, incidentally, he was one of Lynn Ludwig's favorite pupils. Mm-hmm. He took to the sea, you see, very able chap. He is now the Minister of Planning. He and Gottfried were a very good pair, team now.
But it's very surprising that some corporations have been given this freedom and they don't make full use of it and tend to tie themselves up, even buying themselves red tape when they need not.
I suppose it depends on personalities.
In fact, I was wondering about the whole civil service, talking with the...
See, it's much easier to be a conformist. Your whole concept of civil service where you know that if you know your FR, your AR, and you act according to poison, nothing will happen to you that in the progress of time you just rise up year by year in the scale. It's much safer to pay that. The moment you prepare to take risks, you know you'll probably get rubbed over the knuckles. You'll probably be labeled as a bit of a rebel. You won't be popular with your senior. So therefore, under those conditions, you blame the average civil servant to become a complete conformist. Now, that's one of the things I think we've got to tackle from the national point of view. Now, check the wrong government right here. A man rises to be general manager. Now, is he necessarily the best man for it? Now, can't we do this? Can't we remove from the civil service this concept of promotion by seniority? I don't say this, don't let's go back to the other extreme like the private sector where a man is head of things, he's fired. I mean, he doesn't do a job. If he fails his job, he's fired. You get that in the private sector. Ruth Bussey, now take, I know, the classical case I heard of was in America, the soap industry. Lever Brothers, American branch, the managing director there. He was fired. Why? The Procter & Gamble, the big American firm, made a breakaway in chemical detergent. When chemical detergent came to the market to see the soap field, leaving the natural soaps behind. These people research got to market well ahead. Well, the managing director of Lever Brothers was fired. I mean, they probably just the company alone, see, because a big jump like that on a new development in the industry. A tremendous thing. Now, I don't suggest that in the civil service you have that. But I suggest that a man should gravitate to the level of his usefulness. Whereas today he might be general manager. If he falls down, he becomes the level of a station master again. Don't put him on a scrap heap. Make him realize his worth is being recognized. But not over-recognized. Encourage talent, ability, results. Follow me. Now, if you get men selected responsible to the minister to run these organizations, I believe human nature has a pride in achievement. And which one of us doesn't like to have a job well done? I mean, it's not necessarily remuneration only, it's a pat on the back for well done. A fundamental wish of everybody is recognition. Not necessarily money only. Now that's why I say, in these corporations, the minister has to handle these people to get the best out of them. Might be able to do that. Better than Philippine. People are frightened of him. Now I was talking to the chairman of a corporation just the other day, about three before us. I was telling him, okay, you see your board has this, and the minister says this. I said, why did you tell the minister? Why do you accept it? He said, what else can we do? I said, well, okay, now, you know, all this development program you're depending upon certain contingencies. I said, but suppose that doesn't happen? Well, then I'm prepared to, the minister won't take action, I'll go up to the prime minister. I said, after that? Well, then I'll resign. But some of these steps are possible to do that because they're in the civil service. And they don't lose jobs, see, they transfer back. But this sense of we've got to instill in people, not only in the corporation, but all to any job they do, doing the job that gets the data.
I suppose one of the problems is that these people are removable at the minister's wish.
Yes. And he didn't give any reason.
He didn't give any reason.
I mean, you could understand that. I mean, after all, they are the minister's appointee. He is responsible for the parliament. But you see, in England, now, I don't know, we once had here at the CSR, we had the vice president of the coal board in England. No, the Electricity Trust. The Electricity Board in England, which is a public corporation there. He came and gave a talk here at CSR. And a lot of travel there. But there you see, in England, certain traditions have been worked. Now nobody would think of a member of parliament in England, going to the chairman of a corporation and giving instructions and putting questions. It's just not done. They are, if they have any criticism against the administration of our state corporation, they go to the minister concerned, to make the representation. But the sort of thing happens here. It's subject to the pressure of every politician, the area.
Oh, actually, they come direct to you.
Oh, yes. I can give you a classic case. With Philip. And Danai. New government came in, Philip was minister of industry, Danai could be minister of home affairs. Now, Danai is president of a union that has a branch of the private corporation.
Oh, I didn't know that.
He's the president of the union there.
What political complexion?
It's only that. And
there must be a unionship.
Oh yes, there's about five unions there. It's about the second strongest in number. Because he used a political gadget. He came in, you see, and capitalism. There's a lot of wrong story about union politics. Anyway, he's chairman there, president there. Now, about 5-6 months after Philip was minister, I was having a board meeting here, the private corporation, and just before the board meeting, a long envelope came in, addressed to me. I opened it. I found a long letter from Dayanayake, addressed to me, signed by him as Minister of Home Affairs, with copies to my other directors. I think I've got the letter here. And I replied. Shall I listen to it?
Afterwards?
Yes. The substance was this. Yes. Yes, sir. The private cooperation seen from the domination of the Communist Union. I understand the intention of the management to appoint so-and-so to the post of boiler fireman, so-and-so, who is a member of the Communist Party. And a long rigmarole, this chap has a bad tennis record and all that sort of thing, see, and perfect. And this general exposition. So when it came up, the board meeting came, I gave up this letter. I said, you can give it from Sudanizer. In the first place, I strongly object to the Minister of Home Affairs addressing themselves direct without at least the courtesy of going through our minister, the Minister of Institutes. I said, I would suggest, as the judge has come in, I will inquire into it, and that we will reply to this by sending a copy of the minister's letter with a copy, two copies of our reply, to the Minister of Industries, requesting him to forward. I mean, that's the correct thing, you see. So the amusing part is that when I got the manager of the meeting, and our manager for the factory was there, so I got a visual report of the facts, you see. It was almost amazing. The man, first of all, the man who he said was going to be appointed was never appointed. The post, he said, was vacant, there was no such post. There was another post. And the man he had said that we were going to appoint, fortunately I have all the correspondence with Dana, writes volumes of letters, you know. And some time ago that man has been a member of his union. And he introduced a strong letter for the injustice why this man wasn't accused of appointment. And previously he had protested the man who was criticized this time, who was a member of the Communist Party, who was then a member of his union.
Yeah.
He had then taken his case and this man's case had been overlooked for the same appointment. I've got all the facts there, see. So, in our reply, you know what to say? With a copy to his retention and a copy to be forwarded to Minister of Home Affairs. I get back a letter from Philip, from the ministry, enclosing the two letters back to us. The Honourable Minister had no objection to your replying back.
Application of...
And that's not done. I mean, here I was, as chairman, trying to uphold his position. Now, how can he expect to be responsible for Parliament when other people interfering in his work? I'm not testing it should be a row body with a colleague in the cabinet. But there's a lack of basic understanding. First of all, Dayanayake has never done it. It's not done. I mean, there are certain things out there.
But isn't this cutting across red tape to have direct relations?
No, but writing official on the red paper, the minister wouldn't know what's happening. I mean, there are things done out of tape. You might say, red tape now, I used to go down, say, to the leather factory. I had my office here, the plywood. When I went to the leather factory, I didn't just walk in. I knew if I just walked in, I'd be instructing a lot of work. The manager had to come around with me. He might be busy. I only go there on special occasions. On specific things or specific jobs, you see. And if I have to reprimand, if I'm critical of a subordinate there, I never criticize him without going to the manager. I mean, these are things you find are very necessary for efficient management.
It's very interesting about the union. How had he managed to become the second strongest union?
Well, see, the Plywood Corporation is one of the oldest government ventures. That and the Leather Corporation. When the corporation was formed, the personnel who were there at the time became employees of the corporation. Now they had certain conditions of service as government servants. See? They had certain wage scales, leave privileges and so on. When the corporation was formed, government said, okay, we will not, the old employees will not lose anything. Right? Then, from that date, as new people came in, they were engaged on what is known as wage board rates, which is by the private sector. Scales were lower. Now, at the beginning, there was no problem, because 100% of the staff were the old. Then, as years went by, 5%, 10%, 20%, when you entered, what we call the wage board workers. Till about 40% became. Then 50% became. You see? The old chaps died and passed out retirement, sort of thing. Now, then Tanaka very shrewdly went and said, okay, we'll form a union and demand for the wage board workers the same scale as the others. And one first group, we want away from the old established unions, the LSSP and CT, CT strongest there, you see. Old bunch. And so each of the unions there were vying with each other for making more exorbitant demands. And that is the tragedy of trade unions today.
Yes.
The trade unions are more concerned today, frankly, with cribbing membership from other unions, see, than legitimately improving progressively the conditions.
Okay, this is the price of politicization and political affiliations. Because especially in a not so big factory like the
plywood,
one would expect them to form one big union.
There are about 5 unions there, but that's my biggest headache.
What about the Leather Corporation?
Leather Corporation we simplified. Now since this government's coming, there's been multiple unions. But we had, you see, originally when I went in there, there was one workers' union and one territory union. But the workers' union was split, the LSSP and CP. One year the LSSP gained power, then CP. When the LSSP was in power, all the committee of LSSP. And the CP was sort of opposition party within the union. That's not so bad. But subsequently, they had one committee which represented CP and LSSP all mixed together, all parties, and one union for the workers. Later, of course, we got over all that by having a joint council.
A joint council of employers and, executives and?
And board. That, we were the first corporation to do that, you know.
And how did that work? Still working?
Nothing.
When did you stop?
Present chairman. It's very perfunctory now. You see, well, there's no point of going through all that now, that's better.
It wouldn't be in the present government's policy to any
other system. It's supposed to be. Now, Philip made a big pronouncement. He's appointing a worker director. He did.
Where?
The Leather Corporation. The ex-chairman of the Workers' Committee.
Yes.
He's a worker in the factory. He's a director.
So?
The moment he appointed him director, all the unions, including the ULP union, when he deputized to Philip and said, look here, you appoint this man, we don't recognize him. He's not our representative. Philip turned around and said, look here, I appoint the directors of my choice. He's my choice, we have to be a worker. But not a representative there. And I find a very nice chap, which is a complete student, a yes man.
Right, and does he have the confidence to... In fact, that's the problem about workers' committees. I mean, found God very well and they point to Yugoslavia. We are not dealing with Yugoslavia, but we are dealing with Sydney's work.
No, I've got a great faith in the ability. Mm-hmm. You'd be surprised. The ability of our salon worker. Now, I found, just personal experience, when Hartford was here, the Liberal Corporation, the board, decided to introduce certain incentive schemes. Now, incentive schemes are worked on productively. And the board got the assistance of Mr. Hartwell to work out an incentive scheme with our accountants. When Hartwell worked it out, we had two board meetings for him to explain to the directors this incentive scheme and how it worked. It involved a chart that big, certain permutations, accommodations of attendance and the various other factors, you see. Then, when it was finished, the board approved it. I said, now look here, this is an incentive scheme, find the workers. They must understand. Let's go down and meet the joint committee and explain it.
And?
Explain this. Mm-hmm. Discuss it. But the board said, you think he'll understand?
Who said?
The board said. I said, mm-hmm. Well, we just tried. Now, we went down. My knowledge of Singh is limited. Had a good manager then. Mr. Hartwell knew nothing. He was off the job. But we went down and we spent 2 hours at the union.
When
union
I was coming?
Joint council. Mm-hmm. The joint council then. When we came back in the car, Hartwell said, my God. He said, you know, those just asked me questions. Excuse me saying so, but far more intelligent questions your own director asked. He says, they understood the substance of it, because it affects them. I had IPCON doing various jobs there for me, the job evaluation and so on, right? And they told me the IQ of the workers' union is higher than the third union. Education is higher. Oh, some of the stuff is brilliant, the country. And they know the conditions, you see. Then they're aware of things. Now the joint council. That's very interesting. The experience you've had in the joint council. Originally, when it started, they were only concerned with wages and improving their conditions. Selfish interest, you see. Gradually, we found that the subject matter of discussion was much higher level. Efficiencies. Waste. I remember one day at a meeting, we were discussing, and they wanted to know why the incentive payment to one section was lower than previous months. The management said, well, one reason, you have a lot of overtime. The work performance necessitated overtime, which meant higher costs per unit. And the worker said, but can't we cut down the overtime? Now for a worker to say cut down overtime, they want overtime money, you see. Normally in an ordinary workplace, they slack during the ordinary period to get overtime. So they can't cut overtime. So I turned to the manager and said, okay, there's no way of cutting this overtime down. The manager said, we don't think so. You said, let's postpone this item. We'll think of this next meeting. Next meeting came. So this is our Raja and me. He said, have you thought this over? Yes. If you do this and this and this and this, you cut down this and this. So I turned to the manager, the general manager and the manager and the head of the chamber. I said, is this a problem? So like the light dawning is still faint. Look at their faces. That's a simple solution it was, you see. Yes, it will work. It's true.
This is a very cooperation.
Very cooperation. Another time, the council said, look, one faculty boy said, production in certain section was, we were unable to work for 2 hours. Why? Certain parts not available. Some material from the stores. I said, why? So, while we're there, we call the storekeeper in, bring your stock cards. We found the man is negligent. We have a system by which stock cards, you see, not only carry the stock, but there's clearly on each stock card a reorder level. When the stock below comes to a certain level, it must place a fresh order. But each item takes a time to replace. See? He has been negligent that he fallen far below the level. No. It was another worker, another clerk, What is? Do they get this? I had a classical case. This is very interesting because this shows you how even spiritual pressures exist. Shortly after came in, the corporation, particularly the corporation, where a theft. Some hides were lost. For January. And the police there detected these at a boutique nearby and arrested 3 or 4 archers involved in this case. And the matter was taken to court. The aide dragged on and dragged on and dragged on. And it was this boutique keeper, one of the chief witnesses in favor of the police, you see, this case. I immediately interdicted these chaps.